We invite you to join the beard in his weird tales.
The Children by W. Baker Evans.
Mr. Gillespie despised travel agencies. When he traveled abroad, which was frequently since he was rich and loved wandering, he made out his itineraries himself with the aid of the timetables, railway guides, and steamer schedules through which he loved to browse. Sometimes his plans went astray. The sort of predicament he found himself in now was by no means new to him. Stuck on a lonely byroad somewhere in southern Europe, his taxi, if you call it that, wheels up on a grassy verge, the engine in pieces in the dust, and the driver scratching a greasy forehead in token of bewilderment. Mr. Gillespie sighed and looked at his watch. It was just past noon. He must be in Manzik by six if he was to catch the connection to Zagreb. He climbed out of the ancient vehicle, perspiring a little in the hot sun. He was 50-ish and just a little plump, and approached the driver. He knew nothing of the language, of course, but by pointing at the dismembered engine and the dial of his watch, he got the man to understand what he wanted to know. In similar manner, he got the answer. It would be 2 hours, at least, before they were able to move. Mr. Gillespie sighed again and looked about him. There was little to see. The white road was hedged close by dense green woodland, rising gently on one side, falling away on the other. The shade of the trees looked cool and inviting. Mr. Gillespie got the satchel containing his sketching gear out of the back of the cab, slung it over his shoulder, and set out for a stroll. But to his surprise, the driver made an attempt to stop him. An oily hand gripped his wrist. Urgent words were hissed at him, and anxious eyes gazed into his. But Mr. Gillespie was impatient. He shook off the hand and said uselessly in English, "Don't be a fool, man. I'll be back in an hour at most," and moved with determination towards the wood. The driver shouted after him, but he paid no attention. Soon car, road, and driver were hidden by the trees. There were woods, and there were woods. Some were mysterious, some threatening, some friendly, and some aloof. This one, Mr. Gillespie summed up after a few minutes as the Nelvet. True, it was very silent. No bird sang. But the silence was peaceful and not menacing. There was no undergrowth to impede his progress, no weeds or brambles, just soft mossy grass and the smooth trunks of the trees, evenly spaced and rising sheer to branch out in greenery far overhead. What they were, Gillespie did not know. He was no botanist, but the shade was soothing, and here and there they let through little shafts and bars of sunlight to paint the forest floor with patches of gold. It was all very pleasant. Presently, he came to a clearing. There was a fallen log to sit on, and a convenient tree to lean against, and the sunshine, brighter here, made fascinating shadow play with branches and leaves across the clearing's grassy floor. Mr. Gillespie sat down, and he drew out his sketch pad and pastels. He worked happily, head on one side, fingers busy. What the scene lacked, he decided, after a few minutes, was human interest. Ideally, there should be a small boy in a red jumper sitting at the foot of that tree. Mr. Gillespie looked up from his labors and nearly jumped out of his skin. A small boy sat at the foot of the tree, solemnly regarding him. Certainly he had no red jumper. He wore a curious sack-like garment which covered him from shoulders to brown, scratched knees. A warm, solid, flesh-and-blood 10-year-old boy, he certainly was. The boy grinned, showing white teeth, then he got up to his feet and advanced confidently until he stood looking down at Mr. Gillespie from just a couple of feet away. Mr. Gillespie observed with distaste that he carried in one hand the bloodied remains of some small furry animal mangled by a trap or beast of prey, and following his glance, the child smiled and tossed the offending object away. Then he pursed his lips and threw back his head and gave a long, clear whistle. At once, three more children materialized before Mr. Gillespie's astonished eyes, moving out from the shadow of the trees as silently as Red Indians. Two girls and a girl, two boys and a girl, all about the same age, all dressed in sacking shifts, all brown-skinned, bright-eyed, and flaxen-haired. Calmly they regarded him. Then the girl stepped forward, stretched out her arm, and squeezed Mr. Gillespie's leg, but very gently, just above the knee. Satisfied, apparently, by this physical contact, she stepped back and spoke a brief and unintelligible sentence to the other three. Immediately, they were all convulsed with laughter, open-mouthed and shrieking, tears in their eyes. Their laughter died as suddenly as it had begun, as suddenly as children's laughter will. And they sat around Mr. Gillespie in a half-circle, watchful and solemn once more. Mr. Gillespie was not entirely at ease. In the first place, he found the concentrated gaze of four pairs of eyes discomforting. And secondly, there was the annoyance of his total inability to communicate. He smiled, yet their faces didn't alter. He held up his unfinished sketch so they could see it. They showed no comprehension. Suddenly inspired, he reached into his satchel and pulled out a bar of chocolate. He broke off a piece and put it into his mouth. Perhaps they had never seen chocolate before, and offered the rest to the girl. What happened next was so disconcerting that it was several moments before Mr. Gillespie could take any effective action. The girl took the chocolate, smelt it, and bit, and munched it. Instantly, the boy next to her shot her arm out, tore the chocolate away. The girl screamed and flung herself on him, and in a second, the two small bodies were locked in a deadly struggle, clawing, biting, tearing, throttling, rolling over and over on the grass. "Stop it," cried Mr. Gillespie, recovering himself and jumping up. "Stop it at once." This had no effect whatever. The boy's fingers were at the girl's throat. Her nails ripped at his cheeks. And desperately, Mr. Gillespie seized the boy and dragged him to his feet, to be astounded at the strength with which he wrenched himself free. Then in a second, it was all over. The boy relaxed. The girl scrambled up laughing. And suddenly, Mr. Gillespie found himself caught up in a sort of whirlwind dance. A child gripped each hand, and round they rushed in a circle. A mad ring of roses. The children shouting with glee, leaning backwards, heads back, bare feet pounding the turf. And soon, Mr. Gillespie was soon giddy. He huffed and puffed and tripped and stumbled and tried vainly to release himself from the clutching fingers. He succeeded at last and sat down abruptly, mopping his moist brow and waiting for his thumping heart to quicken. Again the children formed their silent semicircle. They were hardly even breathing. Mr. Gillespie noted, let alone panting as he was. Once more he felt a gentle squeeze above his knee. It was one of the boys this time, and again came unintelligible words, but no laughter, just solemn watchfulness. It was time to get back to his car. Mr. Gillespie rose to his feet, annoyed to find his wigs light, wobbly after his exertions. The children stood their ground, intent and still, and then the little girl moved forward, pursing her lips and raised her arms to be lifted up and kissed. Mr. Gillespie was touched. He picked her up, her arms slid round his neck, and from between those rosy lips, shockingly, came breath as fetid as an animal's. The green eyes stared into his, and suddenly terror, wild, unreasoning terror, flooded Mr. Gillespie's very soul. He screamed and tore at the encircling arms. They were immovable. He screamed again. Even as he did so, the fair head dipped toward, and the white teeth closed on his throat. Avid hands wrenched at his ankles, and he fell, all four on top of him. For a little while, he threshed and struggled, and screamed once more, chokingly. But soon there was no more movement, no more sound, except presently the scrape and the scrape of strong young teeth on white bone.
Join us tomorrow for the next part of the Beard's Weird Tales. Mm-hmm.